Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I am your host for this weekend edition. I want to first and foremost wish everybody a very happy new year. I hope that most of you, at least some of you, got to get out and see some of your friends, or at least your family, got to hang out with somebody, because it was a tough year. No doubt about that when it comes to building up relationships with people, especially face-to-face. Now, on this weekend show, I am going to be, again, kind of looking back over 2020 and recapping some of the better investments, some of the more popular posts by some of my guests, and then using that as a jumping piece to next year and the outlook for a wide range of sectors into next year. I'm kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of The Felder Report. Now, Jesse, you always, for your subscribers at the end of the year, write a post that recaps some of the most popular posts of 2020. You and I were talking about these off mic. We're going to break it down into three different sectors, starting with earlier on in 2020, you wrote about gold. That was in spring. You wrote about the opportunity that you were seeing in the precious metals. Give us a little rundown of this post, how much attention it attracted, and how you think it kind of lends into moving into 2021.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you and your listeners probably know, if they've heard me at all on your show the last few years, I've been just pounding the table bullish on gold for the last few years. But back in the spring, when the markets crashed and gold, you know, cracked pretty hard too, it was pretty apparent to me that the deficit was going to explode higher. We were going to make the $1 trillion deficit of, you know, 2009-10 look like child's play. And so I wrote a post called, you know, Got Gold. And, you know, I just basically, I titled one of the charts in that, you know, fiat currency insurance. And, you know, one of the times you really want to own gold is when the deficit is exploding like that, because, you know, money printing and all those things usually, you know, result in higher gold prices. So, yeah, back in the spring, I think it was, you know, it was a key time to make sure you at least had some exposure to gold, given what was going on from a fiscal standpoint.
So, Jesse, you mentioned about how the deficit is exploding or was exploding, and that's a good time to own gold. Where do you see the setup now in terms of the deficit does still seem to be growing quite quickly, but you could make the argument next year, if we can get back to some semblance of our daily life, maybe that deficit growth in the negative territory, it slows down, at least that momentum.
Yeah, you know, I turned cautious towards gold, you know, after it kind of rebounded off of those spring lows. And it started becoming clear that, you know, negative real interest rates, which are another real, a very important driver of the gold price, were maybe as extreme as they were going to get for this cycle. You know, we saw negative, you know, 1%, 1.5% real interest rates. And, you know, when real interest rates start rising, and they don't need, nominal interest rates don't need to rise, you just need to see, you know, inflation decline or nominal rates rise, you know, in some combination. That, you know, is not a good backdrop for the gold price. So if you, I'm cautious currently on gold because I do think we could see rising interest rates and a falling, a narrowing deficit going forward, which could, you know, cause gold to correct a little bit further in the short run.
So, Jesse, you also write a whole lot about the gold miners, too. And the gold miners, they're putting up some pretty good financial numbers. Even if we do see some, at least short-term weakness in gold, if we do get higher rates, and who knows, maybe a little bit of a slowdown of the stimulus trade and stimulus news, do you see the miners performing decently or at least holding their current levels?
You know, really, they're going to follow the gold price. I think what the stock market is trying to do is discount what the future is going to look like a year to 18 months from now. So, you know, right now, I think people are discounting the gold price is going to be at least where it is today. So if we do get a breakdown in gold, the miners will respond because that means their cash flows and all those things are going to not be as great over the next several quarters as people are probably expecting right now. So I do think if the gold price does break down, and I think it has, you know, has risk down to that 1700, maybe even just under 1700 level. If it does break down to that area, gold miners will correct too. Now, to be perfectly honest, though, I would see that as a wonderful buying opportunity in both if that were to come to pass.
How quickly do you see this correction as potentially happening? Because in all fairness, gold has been fairly range bound. It has been in a general downtrend, but bounced recently and right now is just trading in a range.
Yeah, I mean, actually, from a technical standpoint, just purely technical, since that, you know, August, early August peak in the gold price, this looks like a bull flag pattern, just like we saw from September to November of 2019, towards the end of, you know, last year, before gold prices broke out higher. And there was another, you know, pennant kind of a flag, you know, pattern before that in the spring of 19. And so this to me just looks like another bull flag, just from a purely technical standpoint. What I'm concerned with is interest rates should be higher in the United States right now. The Fed is currently suppressing those. But with the dollar tanking, I think Jay Powell right now is playing chicken with the dollar. And if the dollar continues tanking, he might be forced to allow interest rates to climb to a degree just to prevent, you know, a real collapse in the currency.
Do you see any of this leading towards some sort of inflation, though? A dropping dollar, a weak dollar can result in inflation.
Oh, yeah, I think we're definitely going to see inflation pick up next year. You know, you just look at the year over year change that we're going to see in the price of oil. And, you know, that's going to be, you know, dramatic for headline CPI. Now, core CPI is, you know, excludes that. But if you look at what the other commodities markets are telling us, look at what the copper price has done. The copper price is very highly correlated to interest rates. And, you know, the copper price to me is saying the 10-year treasury note should have at least a 3% yield right now, and it's under 1. So to me, if interest rates, if we just see that 10-year note yield go to 1.5%, 2%, that's going to be, a strong headwind for the gold price in the short run.
All right. So you mentioned energy and commodities. You also wrote about that back in early August. Actually, in September, too, you also released a post that said it's time to get greedy in the energy sector. Energy, oil in particular, has really bounced back, especially when it dropped into negative territory. But we also looked at some of the clean energy, and those ETFs just continue to do well. They perform very well in the second half of the year. How do you see energy and commodities currently?
Well, yeah, it was back in early August I wrote about commodities, the broader commodity market. I mean, if you look at gold versus, you know, the CRB or any other commodities index, they usually run together pretty tightly. If you look at that from 1970 to 80, they both screamed higher together and then corrected from 1980 to 2000. That 20-year period was not great for gold and commodities. And then when, you know, the gold market took off again after 2001, too, you know, the commodities and the oil price took off around then also. But really, since 2011, you know, gold has went through a period of correction, recently took out that 2011 high. But commodities have been hammered so much harder than the gold price. So, I mean, commodities literally went back to their 1970s, you know, prices, that those commodity indexes. Gold's obviously nowhere near that. And so to me, the rest of the commodity world looked, you know, in August and still does today, very, very cheap relative to gold. And relative to financial assets, it looks even, you know, they look even more cheap. I don't think commodities have ever been this cheap relative to financial assets like stocks and bonds. And so commodities are probably, you know, I wrote about there being a generational opportunity to invest in commodities. I followed that up in, you know, September with saying, you know, specifically, it's probably a good idea to look at the energy market. So it's the, you know, you look at those commodity indexes, they're largely, you know, oil is a big part of those. And the oil price went famously went negative back in whatever it was, April. And the oil price, all these oil stocks looked like they started trading evaluations like oil was going to stay zero forever and they were all going to go out of business. And so that's just obviously we know that that's not the case today. The oil price has rebounded strongly and probably is going to continue to power higher, I think, through next year. So, you know, energy sector could be the, you know, the best performing sector of 2021.
So how are you distinguishing inside the energy sector? Oil, fine. That's a bit more mainstream. That's a has a bit more of a lifespan that we can go back on. This clean energy, though, as I said, it was running. Are you making any bets on the clean energy sector as well?
I don't have any positions in clean energy. I do think probably that in a lot of areas, especially like, EVs and these things, you know, plug power, a lot of these stocks are probably in a bubble. The popularity of, you know, I mean, Tesla is really kind of the poster child of the whole thing. But to me, when I talk about energy, I'm talking about oil mainly. And within those areas, I'm focused on the oil and gas exploration and production companies and the infrastructure companies too. The pipeline companies, terminals, those the companies that operate that stuff are a lot of them have, you know, 10% dividend yields and still nobody wants to own them because they don't fit with an ESG mandate. But that's usually when a sector becomes quote unquote uninvestable is usually the best time to invest in it.
Yeah, that's so true. But are you expecting oil to move higher from here? Do you see potential as maybe some more weakness as we move through these winter months? And unfortunately, we need to talk about COVID, potentially some sort of a COVID shutdown or again, a slowdown economically.
Yeah, I think the oil price, you know, people were essentially betting that we were going to have this massive oil glut because demand is going to drop off permanently. You know, obviously, we saw demand drop off, because of the pandemic. And that's, you know, a situational thing that is unlike anything we've ever seen before. But also, we saw oil production in the United States dropped more dramatically than it ever has in history. So we stopped pumping oil, more than ever before. And so you saw over the past 6 months, oil inventories coming down in the midst of the pandemic. So when you, the problem is this stuff, everybody thinks, you know, with fracking, all this stuff can come back online in a heartbeat. Once demand comes back, supply will be able to match it. That's just not the case. I do think there's a decent chance we could even have a supply disruptions in the oil market and oil prices screaming higher just because we've literally cut off all production. And when demand comes back, and it's going to come back in a big way next summer, supplies will just not be able to keep up with demand. And we could see a real squeeze higher in the oil price.
Interesting. Now, just in terms of commodities, what about base metals? You have something like copper that is really exploded in the last couple of months to levels that we haven't seen since very early on in 2013. That's a long time that oil has been a sub these prices, right around 360. Do you see base metals as being able to continue their run?
You know, that's a good question. I think they're largely driven by the recovery in the Chinese economy. They're obviously the biggest buyer of, you know, steel and copper and all these things. But, you know, you mentioned also alternative energy, new energy technologies and things. And a lot of these metals need to go into production of these new forms of energy, whether we're talking about, you know, wind or, you know, solar power or the EV, you know, cars themselves. Demand for all of these metals is potentially going to be outstrip supplies because, you know, we don't have there, you know, we've never had the demand for nickel, you know, that we've had, that we're going to have if EVs are indeed the future. And so, there could also be shortages of a lot of these different types of metals as well. It's going to be really, really interesting to see the thing that when I look at the copper price, I think of first is how can we have copper soaring to new multi-year highs, commodity indexes breaking out to multi-year highs, and the 10-year treasury note under 1%. It doesn't make sense. And this is why the dollar has been, you know, I don't want to use the term crashing, but it's gone straight down for months. And that's because I think people are worried that interest rates are being suppressed. That who wants to own dollars, who wants to own treasuries when the Fed is doing what they're doing? They're going to have to either let the currency crash, or they're going to have to allow interest rates to creep back up. And so that, to me, when I look at copper, that's the main thing I want to look at is the 10-year note. There's a major mispricing there, and it's got to rectify itself one way or the other.
If we do see the Fed allow or enable the long end, really any yields to rise naturally, well, that could be a very, very different market and a very different outlook when it comes to the Fed. Let's wrap it up here, Jesse, with a comment on Bitcoin. I know you don't necessarily like talking about Bitcoin. Even in November, you posted, I think what was one of the most popular posts on your website, please stop asking me about Bitcoin. Hey, in all fairness, Bitcoin has just exploded higher. How are you viewing this Bitcoin move?
To me, you know, I'm not necessarily bearish on Bitcoin. I do think there's a good possibility that this is another speculative mania. I do think it's more Ponzi scheme than an investment. My point in that post was say it's fine to speculate in Bitcoin, but I don't buy the argument that it is a valid store of value. There's just too many problems with it from my perspective. That, you know, I think it was the most popular post or second most popular post behind the energy post that I wrote this year because so many people are getting interested in Bitcoin. The reason I wrote that is because that's all anybody wants to ask me about is Bitcoin. I had two friends over the holiday break both reach out to me and ask if they should buy Bitcoin. We had this week news that an NFL football player is now being insisted upon being paid 50% of his $13 million annual salary in Bitcoin. And it just reminds me of back in 2007, it was like November of 2007, Giselle, supermodel, came out publicly and said she would not accept dollars for payment anymore. She only wanted to be paid in euros. And that was literally like 2 months before the peak in the euro, before the euro collapsed in value over the next, from 2008 to 2018. Suffered a pretty nasty, 10-year bear market. You know, to me, this news of NFL players wanting to get paid only in Bitcoins is very reminiscent of that Giselle trade, which was a disastrous one.
Now, it sounds like you don't view Bitcoin in any way as a competitor to gold or any of the, let's say, safe haven assets or the store of value assets.
No, the problem that I have is a true store of value has to be accepted as money. And a lot of people are saying, okay, Bitcoin's being accepted as money. It's a good point, though, to be made that even with this NFL player who wants to be paid in Bitcoin, they're not actually paying him through, you know, using the Bitcoin network. They're having to because that's too cumbersome. So, people claim Bitcoin can be used as money. That's really up to people to decide. If people do largely accepted as money, that's fine. But as a store of value, the other side of it, it needs to be truly limited in supply. People say, well, Bitcoin is limited in supply. I say, well, what about all the hard forks, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin Gold? There's been all these hard forks that every time you get a hard fork, it doubles the number of Bitcoins in circulation, just creates a whole new type of Bitcoin. Not to mention, we've got, you know, Ripple and Ethereum and all these other cryptocurrencies. And as, you know, Elon Musk was talking about Dogecoin, right? I mean, it's kind of a joke that anybody can go create their own cryptocurrency in a heartbeat. And I think there's a good chance that like the Chinese are doing, the Federal Reserve will create a federally backed cryptocurrency. And they will say this is the only one that is legal tender. All the other pretenders are not. And that's one risk to the store of value argument that I don't think Bitcoin aficionados are really giving its due.
What type of investors do you think are in or moving into Bitcoin? I've heard a lot about institutions really chasing this run higher. What have you seen?
Yeah, you know, we've heard Stan Druckenmiller, Paul Tudor Jones came out in recent months and both said, you know, Bitcoin is a great speculation. And I do think that's an important distinction. Neither one of them claimed Bitcoin was a good investment. And so I do think it's very clear that it's speculators that are you know, playing in this market. It is a pyramid scheme, a Ponzi scheme, whatever you want to call it. The earlier you get in, the more likely you are to make money. And because it's simply about buying something and then recruiting others to come in and push the price higher. And I do think that is the dynamic, the only dynamic that's driving the Bitcoin market. And it does have a compelling story surrounding it. I just don't believe that story.
Hey, fair enough. Jesse, we'll wrap it up there. It's great having you on the show, man. I really appreciate all the time you have spent with us. And I always enjoy reading over your, the Felder Report. It's a wealth of information. You post a number of articles on a pretty regular basis. So it's been fun following along on this crazy year. And hopefully 2021's a little bit smoother. But in all fairness, the markets did really well this year. So maybe we'll get just another good year for the markets and even commodities. Jesse, thanks again for your time. I hope you had a very happy new year. And hey, man, we're going to continue to chat throughout 2021.
Thanks, Corey. Happy new year to you and all your listeners.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, I am featuring Chris Vermeulen. He is the founder and editor of The Technical Traders. Chris joins me pretty much every 2 weeks in the more or less the middle of the week. And I don't usually feature Chris on the weekend show because we're talking about some more of these short-term trading strategies that Chris is employing and sharing with his subscribers. But Chris, since this week it's such a shortened week, and quite frankly, I think when you're trying to day trade or trying to short-term trade some of this lower volume trading, it's almost better to turn away from these markets and take some time to reflect on some of the good trades of this current year and what you're looking forward to for next year. Give us a little rundown or breakdown of some of your better trades and the strategies that worked in 2020, please, Chris.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, to kickstart the year, we originally got into the gold miners. I mean, gold miners had a beautiful price pattern back in 2019. They had flagged out through the middle of 2019. And when that bull flag started to break to the upside, we got into GDXJ. That was right at the just before 2020. So November, December, we got in there and we ended up holding on to that. Until it reached our targets. And believe it or not, the day that GDX put in a high in December, it was on December 24th, it was this massive gap to the upside. And this huge gap actually surpassed our price targets. And we actually exited at the opening bell that day. And from there, we saw GDX crash. How much did it crash? It crashed 58%, 57% from that level. So that was, you know, one of the most exciting first trades of the year, seeing that position explode in value We got out at the absolute best tick you could, and then we saw it completely get annihilated after that. And that was because we had Fibonacci targets, technical targets were saying, if it hits this level, we are going to see some selling step in. Now, none of us were expecting COVID, so that sell-off is bigger than we were anticipating because we were looking to get back in eventually. But that was our first trade, and there was a lot of money moving into the precious metals in the early part of 2020. And then after that trade, we ended up moving into bonds. We saw a lot of the defensive sectors. We saw utilities moving up, bonds were moving up, gold was firming up in the miners. The high yield bonds were starting to underperform, meaning people weren't comfortable owning bonds of individual companies. So we saw defensive money moving to these, or money moving to these defensive sectors, and that's what got us into bonds, the TLT trade. And we saw the TLT trade. We got into that. It rallied over 20% while we were in it, while the stock market crashed, and we cashed out of that at just over 20% gain. And then we saw the rest of the stock market crash with COVID, and we sat in cash. I remember you and I actually talking about this, saying, you're like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, we're doing nothing. We're cashed out. We like ended with a bang, you know, getting out at miners, making money on the initial drop in bonds. And now we're just letting this market shake itself out, and we'll wait till there's a new signal, most likely to the upside, to get long. And that's what we did. We sat in cash actually for a couple months as the stock market tried to work itself out. We tried to get a read on what the heck is going on. And then eventually we got into silver. We played a beautiful move in the SLV silver ETF. Silver had a huge move. We ended up playing a good chunk of that rally. I don't know if you remember how silver moved in July. We caught that move in July when it just exploded to the upside.
That's right when it broke out over 18, too. It finally had that breakout and just took off.
Exactly. Yeah, so there was that breakout, and I mean, it was leading the way. That was one of the sectors or the ETFs we jumped in as our band strategy, more or less, to find the best asset now and get on board. So we played that, and we actually got out the day that silver topped. It reached our target. We closed our trade, and then from there on, it's been struggling ever since. And so now the next trade we've been looking for, because I love the precious metals sector. I think there's great potential. You just have to be careful because obviously it can still correct with the market. And so we've been waiting and waiting for gold, silver, or miners to give us the next signal to the upside there. And right now, I really like the SILJ, the SILJ, however you want to call it, which is the Silver Miner Juniors. And so we're sitting with a little profit there. It's looking like it's primed and ready to break and rally to the upside. It's got a lot of upside potential from here. It's got another 50, 60% upside if it is going to follow through with this technical pattern. So I really like that going forward into January. And then another sector that I really like is the EV, the electrical vehicle market. There's an ETF called HAL, H-A-L. And that market's been on fire. It's been doing really well, and it's showing signs of all the leadership as well. So, I mean, that's another sector that's going to do well, and clean energy continues to lead the way, like the solar sector. So there's a lot of really interesting plays and sectors out there. What's really interesting is this past week, we're starting to see money come out of some of those leading sectors, like the solar and the EV market and the clean energy. We're actually seeing money can pull out of those, and they're actually going into some of our worst performing assets. So I've got software. We sort the sectors by the best performing, the worst performing, using a lot of different technical and internal indicators. And it's interesting because on Tuesday, we saw money go out of the leading sectors, and all that money went into the worst performing sectors. So there's a little bit of rotation going on. It's going to be interesting to see if some new sectors start to take the lead next year in 2021, and what the new leaders are going to be. Because always, you know, a leader eventually falls to be one of the worst performing, and the worst performing eventually rise to the top. It's just the cycle that happens in sector rotation. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the year unfolds going forward.
Yeah, it will be. So much still uncertainty heading into next year, but it looks like next year should be better than this year, maybe lacking any sort of major pullback like we saw in March. Let's take a quick look at SILJ then. You said it's poised to break out. It's trading in this range, really a range that it's been in for about 5 to 6 months now, testing out about this 17 level. What is the upside target here if it can break 17 and start to run higher?
Yeah, so the upside target is there's two targets, two key targets. Using Fibonacci extension, we're looking at $20.33. And right now it's trading at 15 and change. The next target is $25 on that ETF going forward. So there's a lot of potential. $10, I mean, we're looking at like a 60% gain to the upside. So it's pretty exciting. I really like this pattern. It's a very strong, a big bull flag. And the silver miners have been showing all kinds of signs of leadership. We've seen several days where they are the strongest sector out of all the other sectors in the market. Silver miners have been holding up. They're making higher highs and higher lows on the daily chart. Gold miners are still stuck in a downtrend. They have a beautiful long-term pattern, but they're not the leaders right now. Silver miners are the ones showing signs of the most upside potential.
Now, when it comes to this EV play, fine, some of these leading sectors like clean energy, even some of these EV plays, maybe some of the momentum has slowed a little bit, but are you translating any of the bullish comments on EVs to any of the other corresponding metals, or are you simply just playing some of the EV actual stocks?
I'm not playing any of the actual stocks. I actually play the ETF that holds a basket of EV stocks. So the Hail is an ETF. It's following a whole bunch of them. It has nothing to do with precious metals. This is a totally different sector, which is the whole point of you know, trading ETFs. You want to make sure you're not always just trading precious metals, because obviously when things go against you, your whole portfolio gets hit. So I'm all about diversification, generally looking to trade the top three sectors at any given time. So right now we're in silver. It's kind of the leader in terms of the precious metals. The EV market has been showing signs. We're in a trade there. We've already been peeling off some profits. We're looking at, you know, what the next sectors might be going forward. But I like Hale. I think it's got, obviously it's had a nice little run here. It could consolidate for a bit. But overall, money continues to pile into the EV market, and it's a nice diversification out of the precious metals kind of arena there.
Chris, what about some of your thoughts on the energy sector, too? The energy sector, I'm hearing some more optimistic comments, but at the same time, a lot of people, at least looking at something like oil, are saying, man, oh man, I could still see another pullback in price here. How are you viewing the broad energy sector as we move into next year?
Yeah, the energy sector is holding up really well. I mean, it used to be the worst performing sector on our list, and it's slowly working its way up the list. I mean, it's up about almost two-thirds up our huge ETF list of ranking. At the top are the best sectors, and as you work down this list, you're getting to kind of the weaker sectors and all those things. So they were the oil, the OIH kind of whole energy oil holders services, XLE, the XOP, like the energy exploration companies, they were all bottom of the barrel before. And now they're working themselves up. They're showing all kinds of signs. They're going from a long-term downtrend to showing now that they've got a basing formation. In a short-term basis, they've had very strong runs. They're in a strong uptrend. So I'm starting to like it. They're getting close enough to the top, almost close enough, that they're becoming something we want to trade. And they do have very strong patterns. I mean, you look at the energy sector, oil energy type of plays, they're all forming like a consolidation, a bull flag pattern. So I think the next run could be really big for the energy sector, and it could put them in the lead. And I think everyone is moving into the energy sector because it was so undervalued that now people are piling in and they see beyond COVID. They know in 2 or 3 years from now, we should be booming with business again. Travels will be back up, and consumption will be back up. So people are investing now in this energy play. So I think it's going to be one of those kind of sleepers where wave two COVID locks everything down, yet oil is looking beyond that, and it's probably going to keep going up, just like we're seeing in the stock market. I mean, we've had the worst news, we're in a terrible economic situation, unemployment's high, yet the stock keeps going up because people are looking beyond this news. That's what I think is happening with oil, and I think oil is going to probably keep going higher.
Okay, well, Chris, I think we'll wrap it up there. Some sectors to pay attention to and also some ones just to keep an eye on as we move into next year. Nothing's for sure next year, but it does seem like a different maybe trade, different strategy throughout the year. Hopefully will work, barring any sort of, again, shock to the system. But, hey, all of that, it's impossible to predict, but you can trade at least some of the levels. And one of the main takeaways I'm hearing from you is stick to your strategies. If certain levels are reached, then buy or sell, depending on your outlook for the different sectors. Chris, great chatting with you, buddy. Again, you can find Chris's outlook at thetechnicaltraders.com. Chris, thanks for all the time you spent with us this year. I hope you had a very happy new year, and I look forward to chatting with you in 2021.
Hey, same to you, Corey. Take care, and thanks very much.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are wrapping up the weekend edition with an interview that I aired earlier in the week with Jayant Bhandari. I think as you guys listen, you will understand why I aired it a little bit early, as Jayant had a bit of a trading strategy around Novo Resources. This was posted, I believe, back on Tuesday, reposting on the weekend show because there's some good information here for all of you who are interested in Novo Resources and even Eric Sprott. Everybody, I hope you enjoy this final segment of the weekend edition this week. Hey, everyone. Welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. This daily editorial will also be featured on the weekend show as I am chatting with Jayant Bhandari. However, I did want to get it out early today on Monday, December 28th, because of the fact of, well, some of the timing that Jayant is going to share with all of you for this stock that we talk about. Jayant, before we started recording here, when we first hopped on the call, I was just asking you, you know, recap 2020, give me some insights into 2021, what's really on your radar? And you flat out said Novo Resources. Now, in full disclosure, I hold shares of Novo Resources. I think you still hold some shares, but I know that you have traded in and out of this stock, but it's on your radar now. Please give us a little update on why Novo is so front and center in your mind.
So I was recently communicating with Quentin about Novo Resources. I have some more information about what is happening with Beaton's Creek, Corey. And Corey, when Novo reached a share price of $8.40, one has to remember and remind oneself who were those people who were buying at $8.40. I was certainly a seller at $8.40. There was nothing that I could see which justified that kind of pricing. Now, that does not mean that Novo might have had a lot more value, but I could not see that value in front of my eyes. I did see in blogs that people were going absolutely crazy about what Kirkland Lake Gold and Eric Sprott were doing with Novo Resources. That was relatively irrational in my view when people invest based on what Eric Sprott and Kirkland Lake were doing rather than making their own rational judgment. So I was a very happy seller at that time. I was pleased that these people were happy to transfer money from their wallet to my wallet. At one point of time, I sold all my Novo Resources shares. Now recently, I have been accumulating them back. And the reason, Corey, is that there has been a lot of negativity around Novo Resources. Kirkland Lake Gold has sold their position or sold most of their position of Novo Resources. There has been tax loss selling that has suppressed the share price of Novo Resources. Surprisingly, Corey, tomorrow, 29th December will be the day when the latest financing of Novo Resources will come free trading. So one should expect a further fall in Novo Resources share price tomorrow, 29 December, as a result of free trading. And that, I think, will become a very good opportunity for me to buy a lot of shares of Novo. And the reason, Corey, is that I have been working on some numbers to do with Beaton's Creek. And what I see in front of me is that Beaton's Creek is assuming that they can do what they claim they can once they go into production, actually next quarter, they could be generating as much as $150 million cash flow after paying for all the expenses on exploration and G&A that they have in other projects. So for me, Beaton's Creek itself, as it stands today, justifies the market capitalization of Novo Resources at the current share price of about $2.20. And I might be able to get some of Novo Resources shares tomorrow at less than $2.20 Canadian.
It's kind of crazy to think that we're now circling back around to Beaton's Creek, because Beaton's Creek was the project that was within the company when I first bought in. It must have been 4 years ago now, something like that. And then all of a sudden, this whole Karratha area came into play, and that's really what drove the market cap to close to $1 billion. Now the current market cap, a little over 500 million Canadian. But Giant, how are you balancing out the Beaton's Creek production that is expected to come online next year, but still all this interest that is on these Karratha projects to the west of Beaton's Creek?
For me, as based on what I see on my spreadsheet, that is all free upside for me, even after taking into account the exploration expenses the company will put on those projects. So if that is a free upside, I don't really want to worry too much about the valuation of those projects, because the Beaton's Creek at this moment provides me a full underpinning of valuation of Novo Resources. I think that Karratha and Agena have a significant upside, but I'm unable to put a valuation on it. The company has clearly not been able to meet the expectations of the market, and some of those expectations were built by the company. But given what it is, my view is that given that this is a free upside for me, I'm just happy to invest in Novo Resources just for Beaton's Creek for now.
Now, what timelines are you following along with when it comes to Beaton's Creek and actually getting into that production?
So remember, Beaton's Creek is not just Beaton's Creek anymore. They have a full-sized mill. That mill has about 6,000 ton per day capacity, which translates into 1.88 million tons capacity per year, which is a fabulous sized mill and one of the only mills in that area. Now, they not only have historical resources at Millennium Mining Ground, which is now a part of Beaton's Creek project, which something Novo hasn't really put out in public because I think they have to do their own independent valuation on the resources there. But Beaton's Creek has resources of about 800,000 ounces in the ground, grading more than 2.2 grams per ton based on the grade that will go into the mill. And that gives you a lifespan of maybe about 7 or 8 years. Now, this is a bit of arm waving, Corey, because Novo hasn't put out an economic study on the project with the current mill as a part of it and the resources of Millennium Mining as a part of the total plan. But with some arm waving, some guesses, I think they can run at a capacity of about 1.4 million tons per year, grading about 2.2 grams per ton. And I think that's reasonably feasible. I've been to the project a couple of times myself. And I think that's a good relatively conservative assumption to take on the project. Now, that will be an extremely good cash flowing project. Remember, 2.2 grams right at surface. It's a very shallow, flat-lying deposit. The mining costs will be, mining and processing costs will be minimal. And it will churn out a huge amount of cash flow. I wish them good luck. There has been a huge amount of delay in putting this project into production. So I can fully understand that the market is negative. And I do hope that the management of Novo manages to deal with their timeline on the project when they talk about when it will come into production.
Yeah, well, this year, that whole transaction with Millennium Minerals and bringing in that mill, that was a big update for the company. But Giant, you even said it there. There is no economic study out on this project. So don't you need to add some sort of risk premium to this investment as well?
Not necessarily, Corey, and I'm already including in my spreadsheet the risk associated with the merged projects. But the reality is that they did have an economic study on Beaton's Creek with an independent mill of their own in that economic study. And now, of course, they don't need to build that mill. They will be using the mill that has come from acquisition of Millennium Mining. So you just have to restructure and accept that some of this this ore from Beaton's Creek will have to be trucked about, I think, 8 or 10 kilometers, which for a 2.2 gram per ton ore is actually not a huge problem. So if you account for all the extra expenses of trucking and the fact that you don't have to build a new mill for Beaton's Creek, and also the fact that you have a much larger mill, which means that some of the resources which you might not have put through the mill devoted exclusively for Beaton's Creek can now be put through in this Millennium Mining mill, because that mill has already been paid for and already been refurbished. So taking into account all those things, I think the risks are minimal. They, from what I recall, they did not have a permit for tailings. And now, because Millennium Mining is a permitted project, they actually automatically have indirectly permit for tailings. Now, of course, they have to get government's approval that they can get rid of the tailings of Beaton's Creek at the project of Millennium Mining. But from what I have heard, that should not be a problem because the basic approval for tailings is already there. So taking into account all these things, I think the risks of the project have reduced hugely. I'm very excited about Beaton's Creek from now onwards. Now, what people often miss out on is that they forget to sell when the share price gets overpriced. They forget to sell and they still participate in feeding frenzy. Those are the time to sell. And this is the time what I think 29th December particularly will be for me the time to buy.
Okay, Giant, this leads us into another discussion very much related to Novo, and that deals with Eric Sprott and him, who has put in just hundreds of millions of dollars into the sector, and also Kirkland Lake. Let's start off with Kirkland Lake, because recently they have sold their position in Novo Resources. I know that's put a lot of investors in an uneasy situation, saying, why is Kirkland Lake selling? They were a major supporter as the company was growing. What's your thought on Kirkland Lake selling out of their position, first and foremost?
So, Corey, Kirkland Lake had their own ways of thinking when they invested in Novo and why they are selling shares of Novo Resources. Maybe their expectations did not get met based on what they were expecting from Agena and Karatha. But remember, Kirkland Lake was, in a way, from what I understand, indebted to Quinton Hennie, because Quinton Hennie did a fabulous job for them in discovering and expanding on their project in Australia. So Kirkland Lake and Eric Sprott, from what I understand, made a huge amount of money from Quinton Hennie's contribution to the company. But what happens is sometimes that when Kirkland Lake and Eric Sprott invests in a company, they might have invested several tens of millions of dollars, but what might be a lot of money for me might have been just a small change for Kirkland Lake Gold and for Eric Sprott. So this is not a criticism of Eric Sprott. Of course, he has been extremely successful in investing his money. He has made a lot of money. And I always have respect for people who end up being successful. But I don't have to follow on their footsteps based on what they are fishing for. Because Eric Sprott might be looking for a return of merely a couple of percent, just trying to protect what his net worth already is. Whereas that should not be my investment interest. My interest should be to grow my relatively smaller sized net worth at a much higher rate than Eric Sprott can ever imagine growing his net worth at. So I think the interests of Eric Sprott and my interests don't necessarily have to coincide, and people should not necessarily follow the footstep of Eric Sprott because his interests are different than my interests.
But how dangerous has that been this year? Because Eric has put in millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into, I don't even know how many companies, but at least a few dozen, maybe even 100 companies, probably not that many. But he has been putting a significant amount of money into individual companies. And we've seen those companies promote on the back end of that. It's included in a lot of news releases. And I know people are paying attention to it. But it's a different investment strategy, right? So how dangerous is this for investors to follow Eric?
Oh, extremely dangerous. I think Eric Sprott, when his name gets used by companies to promote those companies, I think Eric Sprott should look at it and not let his name be abused. But then the problem is not with either the companies or with Eric Sprott. The problem is with people who fall for it. If you are superstitious and irrational, someone somewhere will exploit you. So even if Eric Sprott and companies stop doing those things that I might not agree with, these investors are suckers and they will suffer anyway. So I think the prime responsibility of mine is to make sure that I don't follow the herd. I don't necessarily follow what Eric Sprott is doing. I actually tend to sell stocks when they get pumped up because of the name of Eric Sprott being used. And that's I would expect from any rational investor. So my only suggestion would be not to follow Eric Sprott, which does not mean I have any disrespect for him. It's just that I don't want to be a part of that feeding frenzy.
Hey, fair enough, Giant. But you know what? I give Eric credit. He has supported this sector. Even a couple years ago when companies were struggling to get money, he put a lot of money into some companies that have really turned around their operations and even built some pretty strong companies on the back of it. So Eric has done really well, but we all just need to consider how much money he has and balance that out with our own individual portfolios, because I'm with you. It's easy to get sucked into what Eric's investing in, but we all need to understand and have our own investment thesis and strategy. Giant, hey, great chatting with you, buddy. Thank you for taking some time sharing your thoughts and even your trading strategy heading into tomorrow, Tuesday, December 29th. Giant, thank you very much. Have a very happy new year, and I look forward to chatting with you in 2021.
Thank you very much, Corey, and happy new year to you too.